Welcome to another episode of Emoji Chat, again with my wonderful wife, Sandra. And as we mentioned last week, we're going to talk today about the second part of emotional communication. In this case, a little focus, more focused on the internal dialogue or the internal communication. But as always, the quote of the day. And the quote of the day comes from Seneca. It says, Seneca said, "We suffer more often in imagination than in reality." So that's quite something that Seneca kind of brings out.
It's
the
short,
quote.
But
very intense.
Yeah, intense, really intense.
And before we deep dive a little more into the topic, what is for you? How would you describe or enclose what you consider to be internal communication or the internal dialogue?
I think it's the way we communicate with ourselves. It's that inner thoughts, like the way our brain processes and is sending us information during the day.
Kind of like our narrative, right? Like the way that we kind of narrate, because in this case we're both the emitter of the message, but also the receptor, the receiver of the message.
Exactly.
And it all happens at the same time, kind of at the same time. But we were discussing also that that most of our communication, even the internal communication, happens verbally. And I know for a fact that you are one of those verbal internal communicators.
Yes. Like mine is 24 hours running. And I speak to myself all the time. And it's like that. It's a narrative that I have in my brain. And it will relate things all the time and tell me things, or just trying to process everything that is going on around me. But it's not usually focused in the present. Yes. It's either focused in the past or in the future, which is the problem, is when anxiety and things like that come.
All right, so you're verbal.
Yeah.
I think most people will define themselves as verbal communicators, even internally. But here's the thought, because last week we discussed about the different levels of communication. So Amerabat mentions that only 7% of that whole communication happens verbally. And we tend to attach that concept to our external communication, but does it happen also, does it work that set up internally as well? Meaning, if we speak to ourselves, and you know, probably we tend to speak to ourselves quite negatively, you know, very often. But how do we communicate with ourselves in different levels? So we have, remember, you know, just to remind the audience that we talk about primary communication, which is mm-hmm. the verbal communication. Then secondary communication happens on the nonverbal, the tone, the pitch, how we express ourselves. And then the third, you know, the tertiary communication or tertiary communication happens with the environment,
mm-hmm.
you know. And what are the things that we are telling ourselves with our environment and our nonverbal communication? So, for example, you speak mainly verbally, but what are some of the things that you do that might be nonverbal or environmental that affect your internal communication?
It will be the gestures that I do, or maybe the mood, and even not taking care of your surroundings or even yourself, like when you don't wanna dress up properly, or you don't take care of yourself or your hygiene or makeup or things like that, and everything is telling things to yourself. So when your dialogue is negative, you make all of those things happen. So maybe your rooming is not properly done or clean, and it's telling you a message about yourself, about you don't care maybe enough about yourself. Something that I do quite often when I don't talk to myself is if I pass next to a mirror and I see myself, maybe I don't say anything about how I look, but I was just make a gesture or put a face or something like that, like don't look at yourself or something like that. And it's something that is automatic. I just do it. And maybe I'm not saying something in my mind or thinking about something specific, which I probably I do often too. I will say something about my eyes or my hair or how pale I am, things like that. But sometimes it's just a gesture and to let myself know or to remind me I don't like to look in the mirror.
Yes, indeed. So we use the nonverbal communication. We use the whole environment.
Yeah.
And I like that exercise because one of the things that I want to propose to the audience is that we do that exercise all together, right? That I invite everyone to just look in the mirror and just stand in the mirror. And I love, you know, there are many ways of doing this, but I love how Tony Robbins, you know, sets up the environment. You just kind of separate yourself about 6 feet, like, you know, almost 2 meters apart from the mirror. So it gives yourself some detachment, some distance from the image that you're perceiving, right? And then try to really say nice things about what you're seeing in the mirror. Like, try to stand in the mirror and look at yourself. And if it's possible, tell how much you love yourself. And I want to hear from the audience whether they feel dissociated or not, or what are the feelings that go, what are the emotions that go through that exercise when they're looking at themselves in the mirror. Because it's important, because the problem is that when we our and then it's there is this Chilean psychologist that talks about the anticipators of disgrace or disaster, so to speak. It will be the translation, because the speech is in Spanish, but it's these people that constantly they assume that everything is gonna go wrong.
Yeah. That's me.
Sounds funny.
Yeah. It's like my brain is focused on all the bad possibilities that could happen, all the negative possibilities. And once I find one or more than one, it will be like, this is gonna happen. It's not even a possibility anymore. It's like reality in my mind.
It's so gonna happen.
Yeah.
Yes. But we are quite anticipators of disasters for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we tend to believe that everything about us is quite negative, like, and then we project that onto the environment. And here's the thing, because, you know, when we project that negativity onto the environment, that's really how we're presenting ourselves into the environment, that internal dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the tricks that you've used in the past to allow you to move away from that internal negative dialogue?
To move away from it, I mean, it's something still happens a lot. But one thing that I've learned is usually the negative talk comes thinking about the past or maybe thinking about the future. So when you focus on the present, usually is easier to not be so negative. Because right now, if I only focus on the present, I mean, we are having a nice talk, we are sitting down, we're feeling okay and comfortable, and so there is no worry or any negative talk I have to say about myself or how I'm doing, because I'm just feeling okay. So focusing on the present would be a nice way of trying not to have negative.
It's fair enough.
Yeah, and also thinking about what is going on in your thoughts, because sometimes it is automatic, and it's like your mind is running by itself and you have no control over it, because it is just working, you are not doing anything, so you feel like you cannot stop it, and it's usually because we don't know what's going on, we are just suffering the consequences. But sometimes we have to sit and just let it run and just see what he's thinking. Maybe he's thinking about the past or the future, or maybe he's just focusing on myself and maybe the things that I think are wrong with me, or maybe I'm just looking for problems in my life, things like that.
No.
So when I focus on those things and I can be aware of them, it's a way or of having something to work with.
Yeah, and in an episode that I was recording earlier, and that we will publish also on later this week with Rachel Toon, we talked about overcoming limiting beliefs, and I love her point of view. So I'm not going to advance it because I want people to look at it, to listen and look on the watch it on the episode. But I have to confess that in the past 2 weeks, I've been suffering myself with a lot of that negative speech, that negative dialogue, because a lot of the projects that have been ongoing are not as successful as I anticipated by now. And it's very quickly how the mind turns you into a failure, right? Like how you're able to label yourself so quickly negatively, right? And obviously I have a lot of tools to overcome that, and it requires a lot of motivation, self-motivation and discipline. The past 2 weeks, as we're recording this episode, I'm struggling with how my thing, things are going for me in life right now. But I understand the importance of becoming the observer, as you mentioned. So one of the things that I believe is very important is, like you said, knowing your enemy, right? And if you think of becoming kind of the spectator of your own thoughts, then they have less value. And one of the exercises that one of the meditations I practice quite often in transcendental meditation is that you have to observe your thoughts that are ongoing during the meditation and kind of detach from it, right? Like just think as if it's a film that it's kind of like moving away, right? Like they're disappearing into the distance. And in a way, it's an exercise of self, mindfulness, self-consciousness of, hey, I'm not my thoughts. It's about really understanding your own value. So I want to offer for that self-narrative, that self-dialogue, I want to offer three tips, three advices for the audience to apply. And this can be applied in any circumstance, because we present ourselves, and remember, primary, secondary, and tertiary communication at work, in the work environment, with ourselves, our loved ones, our friends. So the first tip that I want to offer is what you mentioned before, is be present. Because one of the things that I've noticed is that, and I use this as a kind of like a alert, like an early warning system, like an alert system, a red flag. It's my levels of energy. I remember when we were, I was really, really stuck in the emotional distress that I was constantly tired. Myself, I'm quite hyperactive. Like I'm like way upbeat. I'm very energetic, and I can take on a lot. But then most of those days, I felt like I was constantly just drained of energy, and it was because all that energy that was meant to be put into the efficiency of my work or my achievements, or goals or whatever. Most of that energy was put into that internal fight of constantly trying to find that argument or win the argument over myself. So a lot of the energy was, displaced into that. And I don't know if you've experienced that, but what are your thoughts on that, on avoiding that?
I mean, you have to go through that process when you try to identify your thoughts and process them, and all the feelings from those thoughts will come back to you.
You mean when you're looking at the past, right? Like when you're experiencing the past.
Yeah, or the future. But when you, like you were saying, being aware of what is going on in your mind, it will drain energy. But it is something that happens every day when you have those kind of thoughts. So to try and focus on those and process them and maybe accept them, or just try to know what is going on in your mind, it will take energy from you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that when you do it, you will have more energy afterwards. If not, it's a daily energy
drain.
That, because your brain is going and going to the past and going to the future, and you cannot feel at peace at any moment.
That's crazy, because I absolutely agree with you, because, you know, when we tend to focus on the past, we tend to focus on our perception of the past. So we're kind of reliving and we're wasting that energy in what we think happened in the past, or how that experience or that situation was perceived by us in the past. And the mm-hmm. future, all we can focus is on, I can only expect, you know, it's the energy that goes towards expectations. Like, mm-hmm. I cannot know what the future will take, you know, what will bring. But
in both of them, you can do nothing about it. Because the past, you can, like, thinking about it, you leave the situation again. It's like you are, how would you say that, like, living it again? Like,
yeah, reliving it.
Reliving it, like, it's happening to you again. But there is nothing you can do to change it. So you just can have it like a movie in your mind, but you can do nothing about it. And with the future, it's the same. It's energy that is being taken from you for something that you can not do or change maybe yet. So is what brings anxiety, because your present is not in the past or in the future. So your mind and your presence is not in the same moment of time. So it will bring anxiety and...
The anxiety gap, as Eckhart Tolle mentions in his book, The Power of the Now. That's fantastic. And it takes us into a second advice. So we talked about using a lack of energy as a red flag. It's one of the advices. So that means that we need to work on being in the present, because mm-hmm. we cannot control the past or the future. And the second advice is the control circle, right? Mm-hmm. So... And we will talk about that specific topic of the paradox of control mm-hmm. in a full episode, because it really has a lot of meat to the bone and that we can expose. But one of the ways that I look at it is something that you taught me, and maybe you can recall what you taught me. But I apply this at work and in life in general. But the only thing, you know, that we need to understand, that the only thing that we have control of really is our thoughts. How do we react to a situation? We cannot control the outside circumstances or the environment. We can't, because it's outside our control. But we can control how we react to those circumstances, regardless of those circumstances. And I think, as an example, Viktor Frankl is an example people can Google. Viktor Frankl is a great example of that. But you told me one sentence, and I want you to recall it if you remember. But and this was in a moment where I was struggling with a few issues and problems, and I couldn't find a solution. And I was feeling very anxious at work about mm-hmm. how do I solve these, and what is mm-hmm. it that you told me? You remember what you told me?
Yeah. It was, if you have a problem, if it doesn't have a solution, why do you worry? And if he does have a solution, then why do you worry?
how freaking simple. It's so crazy that it's overlooked sometimes because of the simplicity. But it really, life it can be that simple, to be honest. We make it very complicated ourselves. But I love that you told me that, because I've applied it over time and it's very powerful. At the end of the day, If we find, and this is what the advice is, again, the second red flag that we can use on our internal dialogue, if we find ourselves constantly preoccupied, worried about something, then we need to reconsider how we're speaking to ourselves. Because, you know, worry stands outside our circle of control. Mm-hmm. And the problem with preoccupation and worriness is that there's nothing you can do really about it. I mean... It's not like if you have to pay your mortgage and you concentrate in your concern and preoccupation enough, the mortgage is going to pay itself. Mm-hmm. You just got to find what is it within your control to pay your mortgage. Mm-hmm. So it's about understanding that if I'm preoccupied, that means I'm working outside of my circle of control. Mm-hmm. And we tend to absolutely love preoccupation. We think that preoccupation validates our thoughts of ourselves, that internal dialogue. Have you experienced that? Because sometimes when we project ourselves into the environment, we have to find those elements in the environment that will validate our negativity.
Yep. That's the thing with the internal dialogue, is that your brain will try to find anything in your surroundings that will tell you, see, I'm telling you the truth. This is how it is. And you will find proof of everything you have in your mind. And it happens to us. It happened to us when you buy a new car or when you are pregnant or whatever it is that you become aware, you will start seeing everywhere. So with negativity is the same. If you focus on something, then you will find proof of that all the time. The problem with finding proof with the negativity things is that you tend to believe there is anything, there is nothing possible or anything that is positive, because you are just only finding a proof of negative. But it's because your brain is focused. And one thing that I see with worrying is like the opposite of something that people are talking a lot right now these days, is manifestation. When you manifest all the things you want, and I truly believe that works, because it's when you manifest the things you want and you believe it possible, your brain focuses on that and it will find any proof or opportunity to make it real, to make it truth. So the same is with worrying. If you worry, it will be like manifesting like negativity. So you will find that, you will find proof, and you will attract those things, and it will happen.
Awesome. So I love that, because the antidote to preoccupation is manifestation. So again, the first tip was be in the present, you know, use the lack of energy as a red flag to come back to the present. Mm-hmm. Then we mentioned the circle of control, and what is outside is preoccupation, and the antidote is manifestation. So believe that the solution is there, and then manifest it, and then you look for opportunities to make it happen rather than bringing the problem and just the preoccupation and no solution. I love that. So those are the two tips that I want to give. The third one is what I call self-kindness. And I want to explain what self-kindness is. And the way that I use this, or why is it so important, is because, well, first, what it is, and then why is it so important. Mm-hmm. First, what it is if I ask you to describe your best friend, please describe your best friend.
Well, I would say smart and hardworking, good-looking, kind and loving, funny. Sometimes a little bit tiring. He has a lot of energy, but yeah.
Okay, so it's perfect. Your best friend is perfect.
No, it's not.
but you're describing it as he's almost perfect. Like everything you say about him is, and it could be her, whatever. But everything of your best friend seems to be positive. Mm-hmm. But if I ask you to describe yourself, how would you describe yourself?
It will be completely the opposite. I will try to find all the negative things about myself. For me, it will be really hard to describe myself as that. I'm sure that if somebody that is my best friend, or you, my husband, or maybe a family member, or they will describe me, and I will say back. Yeah, I will say back like, no, that's not it. That's not how I am, or you're wrong, or something like that. Because I cannot see myself like that. I cannot. And it makes me think how negative our internal dialogue and the kind of relationship we have with ourselves. I remember one time in a class, and somebody was asking us to put in at least like the first 3 or 5 people that we love the most. And I made my list and everyone else, and we were like my husband, my children, or my parents, things like that. And when we all said people we love the most, he asked us, and he said, "What are you in this list?" And for me, it was a shock, because it was like, do I count? Do I have to put myself? And when you think about it, sometimes it can look bad, like you loving yourself, like your ego, or you feel like better But no, the truth is that you do need to love yourself. You need to be kind with yourself. And we should be able to describe ourselves like we describe our most loved ones.
Self-kindness.
Yeah.
Thank you, because that's very interesting. The point of self-kindness, you know, the description is this, you know, I guess it's linked to what we were discussing in the episode of loneliness. In a sense, we're all connected. At a subatomic quantic level, we're all connected. So when we're projecting ourselves as negative, we're really projecting the whole environment as negative. So the whole thing is negative. But self-kindness is important for one reason. And the example that I tend to use is, if you were to come to me, and I absolutely adore you and love you, I mean, I will give everything for you. But if you come to me and you say, look, I need $500,000 to start a new business, and I just don't have that $500,000, even though I really want to give you everything that I can give you for, you know, for you to be happy and successful and all that, I can't give you $500,000 because I don't have it. Mm-hmm. So the point is, how can we say nice things about somebody? How can we express kindness towards, you know, the somebody else, the environment, or love, if we don't express love and kindness to ourselves? Or I cannot give what I don't have. It's kind of the concept, mm-hmm, of what I'm trying to say. This is why it's so important. Because if I want to say that I love you, I need to be able to say that I love myself in a way. So I need to experience it and have it before I can give it out or express it outside. So that's, for me, the three tips. So, you know, being present. At least these are the three tips, just kind of to come to conclusion or wrap up. The three topics, the three advices that I wanted to give are: be present. You know, use your energy levels as a red flag of where you are and come back to your internal dialogue of the present. Use the antidote of manifestation against preoccupation. If you're constantly preoccupied, that means that you're outside your circle of control. So come back internally to that circle of control, manifest what you want, and then look for the opportunities to make it happen. And the third one will be self-gentleness, self-kindness. Be gentle with ourselves. It's so important. For me, it was like night and day. My ability to say, I messed up and it's okay. It doesn't mean that I'm a mess up. It means that I just messed up, I got to learn something else and accept it. So for me, that meant that all my energy could refocus quickly into the achievement rather than on the self-pity and the guilt and all that crap that comes with the negative thoughts. Right? So, yeah, I guess as a wrap-up, this is what I wanted to share on the emotional communication internal dialogue. So thank you for being with us in one episode, and we'll see you on the next one, which in this case, we will talk about emotional communication applied to relationship management and how we communicate with those around. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bye.